Have you ever had one of those dreams where you arrive late in a classroom or you're rushing across campus and you have a test that you didn't prepare for and didn't even know that you had? Anyone have that dream? Yeah, for me, sometimes it's a math test. Sometimes it's a computer science test, which was a class I never took. And sometimes it's a rabbinic theology class from a professor who wielded a legendary pen of green ink to ruthlessly mark everything incorrect. It's been a little while since I had one of those dreams, but I can remember the feeling clearly and how distressing it is to face a test you didn't even know you had or for which you feel unprepared. The narration of our Torah portion this morning makes it very clear that the Akedah, the binding of Isaac, is a test. Elohim nisa et Avraham. Sometimes afterwards, God put Abraham to the test. God tells Abraham to take Isaac and offer him up as a burnt offering. And the traditional interpretation is that this is a test of Abraham's faith in God. After longing for a son, would Abraham sacrifice him as a sign of loyalty? The traditional understanding is that Abraham passes this test. He's willing to kill Isaac, believing that this is what God wants. And he only halts the sacrifice when an angel from God tells him to stop, saying, "Now I know that you fear God, since you haven't withheld your son from me." Abraham passes the test. But this traditional interpretation of the Akedah is not the only one that our sages, both ancient and modern, imagine. There are some who read the episode as a test that Abraham fails. Because just a few chapters earlier, God shares with Abraham the plan to destroy the evil cities of Sodom and Gomorrah. And Abraham steps up and challenges God. "Will you sweep away the innocent along with the guilty?" Abraham says. What if they're good people living there? Must they share the same fate as the wicked? Abraham speaks up against what he perceives to be an unfair course of action, and he convinces God to spare the cities if even 10 righteous people live there. Spoiler alert. Apparently there weren't 10 righteous people there. The cities get destroyed. But Abraham protests against injustice. But here, at this most unjust and inhuman request to sacrifice his son, Abraham says nothing. He's willing to go through with this heinous act without even a word of challenge to God who commands it. And he's stopped only when God horrifyingly realizes that Abraham would actually go through with it. And from this perspective, Abraham fails this test. More theologically radical are those who think that this was a test not of Abraham, but of God, and that God fails this test too. Abraham, this view holds, knew exactly what was going on. God, who had finally allowed Abraham and Sarah to have a son, who promised Abraham descendants as numerous as the sands on the shores of the sea, now asks Abraham to sacrifice his offspring as a sign of loyalty. But Abraham turns the tables on God, knowing that God does not want Isaac dead. "Fine," Abraham thinks. "You're going to make such an unreasonable request of me to see if I'll budge in my loyalty to you? But I won't. Let's see this out. How far are you willing to go before you stop me?" Abraham, on this view, dares God to make good on the preposterous request in this existential game of chicken. Abraham goes so far as to draw out the knife before God relents and stops the sacrifice. Abraham wins this instance of brinksmanship, if such a game could actually be won, as God blinks first and fails the test. Regardless of who was or wasn't the subject, and who did or didn't pass or fail the test, the Akedah clearly is about being tested. And that notion of being tested has weighed heavily on me this year in connection with Israel. Israel, Israel has been tested this year. The Jewish community's relationship with Israel has been tested this year. My relationship with Israel has been tested this year, and we cannot afford to fail these tests. Now, the senior rabbi at my first pulpit, Rabbi Eric Gervis, taught me, a rabbi can stand up on the pulpit, say the word Israel, sit back down, and immediately get 5 angry emails from the right and 5 angry emails from the left of what he did or didn't say. So, speaking about Israel today may be somewhat fraught, but it is important. The tests of the past year have been hard and multifaceted and nuanced. and knowing that there is no way to cover it all and risking being misunderstood or offending folks, I hope that sharing my processing, my thinking, my feelings about my relationship with Israel will help you with yours. To begin, we need to understand what we mean when we see Yisrael, Israel. I've explained in a couple of places already this year, but it's important to recognize three different ways of using that word. Am Yisrael is the people of Israel, the Jewish people, the Jewish community. Eretz Yisrael is the land of Israel, the physical geographical space on this planet that lies at the heart of the Middle East. And Medinat Yisrael is the state of Israel, the modern political nation state the country founded in 1948. Am Yisrael, Eretz Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael. Three different terms that refer to three different but related concepts. As a Jewish community, I believe that we have a deep love for Am Yisrael. This is who we are. This is Jewish peoplehood. The connection of a community that circles the globe, encompassing Ashkenazi and Sephardi Jews, religious and secular Jews, Jews by birth and Jews by choice, and Jews of every color and nationality, and the Jewishly adjacent who have thrown in their lot with the Jewish community. Am Yisrael spans not only the geography, but also chronology, because it links us today with our ancestors of the past and our descendants of the future. Our prayer book calls out, Shema Yisrael, listen, O Israel. It is referring to the Jewish people writ large. Our sages teach, Kol Yisrael, Aravim Zebazeh. Each member of the Jewish people of Am Yisrael is responsible for one another and connected to one another. We are a family, and like a family, we may sometimes agree or disagree with one another. We may differ on important issues, but at the end of the day, we love one another like family. We have a deep love for Am Yisrael. With Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, we have a deep connection. That little geographic spit of territory, the land bridge between Africa and Asia, is the site of so many of our sacred stories. We have a historical connection to and a constant presence in that part of the world. Whether it is Tel Dan, the archaeological site up north mentioned in Genesis as the place where Abraham rescues his nephew Lot, or it's Modi'in, the historical home of the Maccabees, or the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, the site of Solomon's and Herod's temple, our people's past was centered in Eretz Yisrael. And even when so much of Am Yisrael was exiled from Eretz Yisrael, when we were kicked out of the land by the Babylonians or the Romans or whomever, our prayer houses were oriented to face towards Jerusalem as our hearts longed to return. The boundaries have shifted and changed over the millennia. The land that was included in Abraham's homestead is different from Joshua's conquest, or David's kingdom, or Rome's province of Judea, or the Ottoman territory, or the British Mandate, or the armistice lines of 1949. Yet through it all, there has been an unalterable core area that is Eretz Yisrael, and we have a deep connection to the land of Israel. Now, it was a modern phenomenon that saw Am Yisrael create in Eretz Yisrael the entity of Medinat Yisrael, the nation state of Israel. This is the fulfillment of a generations-long hope to see a sovereign Jewish homeland. This is the Israel that's a country like other countries of the world, with a flag and a national anthem and a government and celebrities and sports teams and culture and more. It was born out of and continues to be shaped by Zionism, the Jewish nationalist movement founded in the 19th century. Zionism was named for Mount Zion, one of the hills of Jerusalem, and one of the rabbinic names for Eretz Yisrael. Zionism held that the Jewish people should have a state in their ancestral homeland. There are many different types of Zionism. The scholar Gil Troy identifies political, revisionist, labor, religious, cultural, and diaspora Zionism, all of which, by the way, will be part of an adult education course that'll be coming to a temple near you. None of these forms are of Zionism or any other forms of Zionism is about racism or apartheid or genocide or colonialism. Rather, all forms of Zionism share this affirmative sense of the enterprise of a modern Jewish democratic nation state. my Zionism is a liberal, progressive, reform Jewish Zionism. I believe there should be two states, an Israeli state and a Palestinian state, living side by side in peace and in security. I want Israel to exist as a shining example of Jewish values and morals in action. Israel's Declaration of Independence proclaims that the state of Israel, quote, will foster the development of the country for the benefit of all its inhabitants. It'll be based on freedom, justice, and peace as envisaged by the prophets of Israel. It'll ensure complete equality of social and political rights to all its inhabitants, irrespective of religion, race, or sex. It will guarantee freedom of religion, conscience, language, education, and culture. It'll safeguard the holy places of all religions, and it'll be faithful to the principles of the Charter of the United Nations. In its Declaration of Independence farther down, the State of Israel promises full and equal citizenship to its Arab inhabitants and extends an offer of peace and good neighborliness to other countries in the Middle East. Now, we know it isn't easy for any country to always live up to its aspirational ideals. After 248 years, America is still trying. But my ideal Israel continually strives to uphold its foundational principles. Sometimes it succeeds, sometimes it doesn't, but that's why I have a deep hope for Medinat Yisrael, the hope of a modern country living our people's eternal values in our ancestral homeland. This is what I mean when I use the term Israel. A deep love for Am Yisrael, the people of Israel, a deep connection to Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, and a deep hope for Medinat Yisrael, the state of Israel. So we return to this theme from the Akedah, the testing that has happened this past year. In truth, even before the horrific events of October 7th, Israel was facing challenges. Prime Minister Netanyahu's right-wing government was attempting to pass a series of laws that would change Israel's judicial system. Opponents claimed it would remove a vital series of checks and balances on the legislature. And for 10 months, from January through October, hundreds of thousands of Israelis engaged in weekly street protests against these changes. Israeli society was fiercely debating what it wanted the state to be. And then came October 7th. With heinous brutality and unthinkable acts of sexual violence and monstrous depravity, Hamas attacked Israel. Some 1,200 Israelis were ruthlessly murdered, including children and Holocaust survivors and young adults at a desert music festival. 250 people were kidnapped to Gaza, some as young as 3 months old and others as old as 89. The violence, the shock, the depraved glee of some of the attackers was horrifying. The stories of victims and survivors of death and abuse were heartbreaking. Israel launched a devastating response, seeking the return of the hostages and the dismantling of Hamas. Ever since it seized full control of Gaza in a Palestinian civil war in 2007, Hamas has embedded its fighters and weapons among the civilian population, using apartment buildings and schools and hospitals and mosques. Hamas has diverted international aid intended to improve the life of civilians and instead used it to build an extensive network of tunnels and command centers buried beneath the ground. And all of this has made urban warfare necessary for fighting Hamas to be extremely deadly and destructive. The Israeli effort to defeat Hamas and retrieve the hostages has been devastating to innocent Palestinians and the infrastructure of Gaza. And the image of Gazans caught in harm's way has been heartbreaking. And the loss of life truly tragic. In Gaza, militarily, Israel faces the multi-pronged test of ensuring the security of its population and the safety of its soldiers, confronting an enemy that hides behind civilians, searching hundreds of miles of tunnels, rescuing the hostages who are still alive, and recovering the bodies of those killed. And it must do this while abiding by international laws of war and avoiding civilian deaths and injuries and coordinating humanitarian aid. And at the same time, Israel's relationship with its allies, with its Arab neighbors, with the rest of the world has been tested. Anti-Israel sentiment is at alarming heights. Navigating world public opinion has been a tremendous challenge. Domestically, Israel also faces internal divisions over the right way to conduct the fighting. the question of prioritizing the return of the hostages over other war aims or not, the continued distrust of the government and its policies by some large segment of the Israeli population, the thousands of Israelis who are still displaced from their communities and their homes up north, the economic impact of the war, and so much more. And add to all of this the focus in the last few weeks on Hezbollah and attacking its rockets and fighters and leaders in Lebanon. They also embed among the civilian population. And then, even as I thought I was done with the sermon, the week this attacks this past week of the missiles from Iran. Medinat Yisrael, the state of Israel, is being tested like never before. Israel cannot afford to fail this test, not physically and not spiritually. Any modern nation state must provide for the security of its citizens. Medinat Yisrael must defend itself against attack from its enemies and ensure safety for its residents. And this means countering the thousands of rockets and missiles and drones that have deployed against Israel this year from Hamas or Hezbollah or the Houthis in Yemen or the militias in Iraq and the nation of Iran. This means disrupting the planning of assaults and terrorist actions, the bombings and stabbings and car rammings that have been long a part of Israeli life. This means making sure that those enemies who want to see Israel literally wiped off the map and cease to exist do not succeed. From an existential point of view, Israel's survival as a country is at stake and the lives of its citizens constantly threatened. Israel cannot afford to fail this test if it wants to continue to exist. And for Israel to continue to exist in my idealized Zionist vision, Israel has to do all of this in ways that are in keeping with its values, in keeping with our Jewish values. I make no pretension of being a military analyst. I cannot say whether aerial bombardments or special forces raids or ground troop deployments, any of these are the best way to defeat Hamas and recover the hostages or prevent Hezbollah from overrunning the northern border and launching missiles deep into Israel. I do not know the calculus that is used for assessing the death of innocent civilians in furtherance of a military objective. But I can wonder how those decisions are made. I can worry about the right-wing decision makers and how their policies affect Israel's politics and call out the racist and dehumanizing language that the extremists among them use. I can mourn the loss of life of a devastating number of God's creatures in Gaza. I can bemoan the humanitarian crisis facing those living there. I can ask Abraham's question about the destruction of the innocent along with the guilty. And I can hope, with the deep and abiding hope that I have for Medinat Yisrael, that Jewish values are part of that security calculation, and I can speak up when I fear they are not. My Israel cannot fail that test either. Safeguard its citizens, absolutely, yes, and do it in the most Jewishly ethical way possible. It's because of quandaries like this that I feel like our relationship with Israel has also been tested this year. We watch events unfold and our knowledge is filtered through what the media reports or promotes or comments upon. Social media, for better or for worse, shapes our impression of what Israel does or doesn't do. Some in our community occupy one extreme or the other. Either Israel is always right and justified in its actions, or Israel is always wrong and morally corrupt in its activities. Most of us live somewhere in between. We have a deep love, a connection, and a hope for Israel, but we are concerned that Israel isn't living up to its values and how it's conducting the war. Or we are distressed about the massive loss of Palestinian life and the dire conditions in Gaza. But we know Israel is under attack and needs to defend itself, so we appropriately feel the need to defend it. Or there is so much misinformation and misperception out there, especially on social media, that we feel compelled to speak up, even if we aren't sure how to express what it is that we feel. We may feel the requirement to take Israel's side in public discussions with coworkers or school administrators or partners in interfaith dialogues. We may express disappointment in Israel in TBS internal communal conversations. And we may be so exhausted by all of this that we don't know what to do. We may just ignore it and hope that it won't impact our lives. Yes, our relationship with Israel has been tested this year, and friends, we cannot afford to fail this test either. We cannot afford to fail Israel. To those who think that Israel shouldn't exist at all, we must explain its necessity and its origins and its ideals. We must stand up for the right lehiyot am chofshi be'artzenu, as Israel's national anthem says, to be a free people in our land. To those who would hold the state of Israel to a higher or different standard than any other nation in the world, we must call out the hypocrisy and duplicity while still holding Israel to its values. To those who mask their anti-Semitism, their hatred of Jews, behind anti-Israel language and actions, we must reveal their true motivations and decry anti-Jewish hate in all its forms. And for those who disagree with Israel's policies and politics, whether they're outside of the Jewish community or within, if they come from a place of support for Israel, wanting what is best for Israel, just disagreeing on the way to do that, then we must engage those people in honest and open dialogue and respect divergent viewpoints. In all of these instances, we cannot fail to stand up for Israel. If we do not, no one else will. At the same time, we work fiercely for Israel to be the Israel that we want it to be. We do not let up in our striving to see Israel achieve its vision as a nation that fully embodies Jewish values, just as in America we work continually to make sure that America lives up to its values. We support organizations in Israel and abroad that further that vision of Israel, like the Reform Movement's Israel Religious Action Center, which is, by the way, housed in the Rabbi Amy and Gary Perlin office suite in Jerusalem. We encourage Israel to be governed with justice and with righteousness in fulfillment of its Declaration of Independence. We are adamant about the need for safety and security for all the inhabitants of the land, Jews, Christians, Muslims, Druze, Jewish Israelis, Arab Israelis, Palestinians, and everyone. We want an end to hatred, an end to war. And if there must be fighting, let it minimize the horrors of war and let it be conducted justly and lead speedily and soon, we pray, to a time of peace. This is the vision of my Zionism and my Israel. Israel cannot fail this time of testing, not physically and not spiritually. And we cannot fail Israel, not physically and not spiritually. We must be engaged with Israel in all its meanings in order to best love and connect and hold hope for it. As I mentioned, there'll be more information shortly about opportunities here at TBS to educate ourselves about Israel. I'll highlight just a couple. There will be in November a multi-session course on Zionism that I'm going to be teaching, and a one-time class that Stephanie Ben-Simon, our Director of Education, will teach on finding credible sources in the media. Both of these are coming in November. We are also launching a congregation-wide book reading. Over the next few months, we are encouraging you to read on your own two contemporary books, one called Israel, A Simple Guide to the Most Misunderstood Country on Earth by Noah Tishby, and the other, Can We Talk About Israel, A Guide for the Curious, Confused, and Conflicted by Daniel Sokatch. We'll get you information on all of these books, both of these books. I know some of you have been reading one or the other or both of them over the past year. On November 7th, we're convening a congregational meeting to discuss the Tishby book. On December 12th, we'll meet to discuss the Sokatch book. And on January 9th, we'll gather to discuss where the two authors may differ, where they agree, and how their love, their vision, their version of love for Israel can impact our own. One final thought. Our ancient sages teach about two Jerusalems, Yerushalayim Shalmala, the Jerusalem up above, and Yerushalayim Shalmata, the Jerusalem down below. Our own modern sage, Rabbi Jill Jacob, explains, in Yerushalayim Shalmala, the spiritual heavenly Jerusalem, God is visible, suffering is absent, there's perfection. In Yerushalayim Shalmata, the earthly Jerusalem, she writes, real people struggle with deep political, religious, and personal conflict. We live in the world of Yerushalayim Shalmata, the earthly realm, where this past year has been a time of testing. Israel has faced difficult circumstances before, but these days have felt particularly fraught. Our relationship with Israel has also been tested as we have navigated a full range of feelings about the news and events. Yerushalayim Shalmata can be a complicated place, but we know ultimately navigating these testing days can help us ascend closer to Yerushalayim Shalmala, the idealized Jerusalem. Israel cannot and will not fail these tests, and we cannot and will not fail Israel. The testing of Abraham in our morning's Torah portion reminds us that interpretations aren't always so straightforward, and that the true path of faith and fate can be tricky to discern. But even as the relationship forged between God and Abraham abides to this very day, so too do our relationships with God, with Torah, and with the people and land and state of Israel. May we foster a deep love of, a deep connection to, and a deep hope for Israel. May we continually seek ways to make these real in our lives and in our world. May we draw ever nearer to Yerushalayim Shalmala. May we draw ever nearer to a time of peace. Ken Yehi Ratzon, may this be God's will. And together we all say, Amen.